Hello, hello, hello. Here's Marlanka with another episode from Sri Aurobindo, The Synthesis of Yoga. It shall be a sign of the teacher of integral yoga that he does not arrogate to himself guruhood in a humanly vain and self-exalting spirit. His work, if he has one, is a trust from above. He himself a channel, a vessel, a representative. He is a man helping his brothers, a child leading children, a light kindling other lights, an awakened soul awakening souls. At highest, a power or presence of the divine calling to him other powers of the divine. The sadhaka has all these aids and is sure of his goal. Even a fall will be for him only a means of rising, and death a passage towards fulfillment. For once on this path, birth and death become only processes in the development of his being and stages of his journey. Time is the remaining aid needed for the effectivity of the process. Triumph presents itself to human effort as an enemy or a friend, as a resistance, a medium, or an instrument. But always, time is really the instrument of the soul. Time is a field of circumstances and forces meeting and working out a resultant progression whose course it measures. To the ego, time is a tyrant or a resistance. To the divine, time is an instrument. Therefore, while our effort is personal, time appears as a resistance, for it presents to us all the obstruction of the forces that conflict with our own. When the divine working and the personal are combined in our consciousness, time appears as a medium and a condition. And when the two become one, it appears as a servant and again an instrument. Now, the ideal attitude of the sadhaka towards time is to have an endless patience, as if he had all eternity for his fulfillment, and yet to develop the energy that shall realize now, and with an ever-increasing mastery and pressure of rapidity until it reaches the miraculous instantaneousness of the supreme divine transformation. Now, all yoga is, in its nature, a new birth. It is a birth out of the ordinary. The mentalized material life of man into a higher spiritual consciousness and a greater and diviner being. No yoga can be successfully undertaken and followed unless there is a strong awakening to the necessity of that larger spiritual existence. The soul that is called to this deep and vast inward change may arrive in different ways to the initial departure. It may come to it by its own natural development, which has been leading it unconsciously towards the awakening. It may reach it through the influence of a religion or the attraction of a philosophy. It may approach it by a slow illumination or leap to it by a sudden touch or shock. It may be pushed or led to it by the pressure of outward circumstances or by an inward necessity, by a single word that breaks the seals of the mind, or by long reflection, by the distant example of one who has trod the path, or by contact and daily influence. According to the nature and the circumstances, the call will come. But in whatever way it comes, there must be a decision of the mind and the will, and as its result, a complete and effective self-consecration. the acceptance of a new spiritual idea force and upward orientation in the being, an illumination, a turning, or conversion seized on by the will and the heart's aspiration. This is the momentous act which contains as in a seed all the results that the yoga has to give. The mere idea of the intellectual seeking of something higher, beyond, however strongly grasped by the mind's interest, is ineffective unless it is seized on by the heart as the one thing desirable and by the will as the one thing to be done. For truth of the spirit is not to be merely thought, but to be lived. And to live it demands a unified, single-mindedness of the being. So great a change as is contemplated by the yoga is not to be effected by a divided will, or by a small portion of the energy, or by a hesitating mind. He who seeks the divine must consecrate himself to God and to God only. If the change comes suddenly and decisively by an overpowering influence, well, there is no further essential or lasting difficulty. The choice follows upon the thought, or is simultaneous with it, and the self-consecration follows upon the choice. And the feet are already set upon the path. Even if they seem at first to wander uncertainly, and even though the path itself may be only obscurely seen, and the knowledge of the goal may be imperfect, that secret teacher, the inner guide, is already at work, though he may not yet manifest himself, or may not yet appear in the person of his human representative. Whatever difficulties and hesitations may ensue, they cannot eventually prevail against the power of the experience that has turned the current of the life. The call, once decisive, stands. The thing that has been born cannot eventually be stifled. Even if the force of circumstances prevents a regular pursuit or a full practical self-consecration from the first, still the mind has taken its bent and persists and returns with an ever-increasing effect upon its leading preoccupation. There is an ineluctable persistence of the inner being, and against it, circumstances are in the end powerless, and no weakness in the nature can for long be an obstacle. But this is not always the manner of the commencement. The sadhaka is often led gradually, and there is a long space between the first turning of the mind and the full ascent of the nature to the thing towards which it turns. There may at first be only a vivid intellectual interest, a forcible attraction towards the idea, and some imperfect form of practice. Or perhaps there is an effort not favored by the whole nature, a decision or a turn imposed by an intellectual influence, or dictated by personal affection and admiration for someone who is himself consecrated and devoted to the highest. In such cases, a long period of preparation may be necessary before there comes the irrevocable consecration. And in some instances, it may not come. There may be some advance, there may be a strong effort, even much purification and many experiences other than those that are central or supreme. But the life will either be spent in preparation or, a certain stage having been reached, the mind pushed by an insufficient driving force, may rest content at the limit of the effort possible to it. Or there may even be a recoil to the lower life, what is called in the ordinary parlance of yoga, a fall from the path. This lapse happens because there is a defect at the very center. The intellect has been interested. The heart has been attracted. The will has strung itself to the effort. But the whole nature has not been taken captive by the divine. It is only acquiesced in the interest, the attraction, the endeavor. So there has been an experiment, perhaps even an eager experiment, but not yet a total self-giving to an imperative need of the soul or to an unforsakable ideal. Now, even such imperfect yoga has not been wasted, for no upward effort is made in vain. Even if it fails in the present, or arrives only at some preparatory stage or preliminary realization, it has yet determined the soul's future. But if we desire to make the most of the opportunity that this life gives us, if we wish to respond adequately to the call we have received and to attain to the goal we have glimpsed, not merely advance a little towards it, it is essential that there should be an entire self-giving. The secret of success in yoga is to regard it not as one of the aims to be pursued in life, but as the one and only aim. Not as an important part of life, but as the whole of life. Since yoga is in its essence a turning away from the ordinary material and animal life led by most men, or from the more mental but still limited way of living followed by the few, to a greater spiritual life, to the way divine, every part of our energies that is given to the lower existence in the spirit of that existence is a contradiction of our aim, a contradiction of our self-dedication. On the other hand, every energy or activity that we can convert from its allegiance to the lower and dedicate to the service of the higher is so much gained on our road, so much taken from the powers that pose our progress. It is the difficulty of this wholesale conversion that is the source of all the stumblings in the path of yoga. For our entire nature and its environment, all our personal, all our universal self, are full of habits and of influences that are opposed to our spiritual rebirth, and they work against the wholeheartedness of our endeavor. In a certain sense, we are nothing but a complex mass of mental, nervous, and physical habits held together by a few ruling ideas, desires, and associations. An amalgam of many small, self-repeating forces with a few major vibrations. What we propose in our yoga is nothing less than to break up the whole formation of our past and present, which makes up the ordinary material and mental man, and to create a new center of vision, a new universe of activities in ourselves, which shall constitute a divine humanity, a superhuman nature. We shall pause at this point for today. and continue in the next episode. May the listening to these words, these great concepts of Sri Aurobindo, pierce the darkness and be a means of light entering. Thank you so much for tuning in. Ralanka signing off. Bye for now.
This is Auroville Radio, voices from the City of Dome.